This week, we continue a series of conversations with people from diverse backgrounds on what's changed this past year. Today, Muslim Americans and what might seem like an extension of the post-9/11 pattern. A pastor in Florida who threatened to burn the Quran, mass protests organized against the proposed Islamic Cultural Center two blocks from the site of the destroyed World Trade Center, vandalism at several mosques, and tens of thousands of American troops in open war in two Islamic countries and in an undeclared war in a third. But what's changed this past year also involves personal stories. If you're Muslim American, what's changed in your life in 2010? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Mustafa Bayoumi is professor of English at the City University of New York, author of How Does It Feel to Be a Problem? And he joins us from his home in New York City. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And I hope the weather's not too much of a problem.
No, I grew up in Canada, so I'm used to this.
Well, given the title of your book, do you feel like more of a problem after this year or less?
Well, I think that this year saw the degree of hostility grow against Muslim Americans. So I think I would have to say more of a problem.
And I wonder, just given what we were talking about, do those big stories, do they affect your life greatly, or is it more the personal issues that affect you?
No, I think there's a way in which those big stories affect all of us, in fact, Muslim and non-Muslim American alike. But for Muslim Americans and for myself, I think that particularly the Park 51 story, the so-called Ground Zero Mosque story, in the late summer, it really felt like, you could say, like a door was closing in our face for Muslim Americans. It felt like there was a kind of a sense of excluding us from this idea of Americanness itself, and that was really quite new, and it really was troubling and made me sad, actually.
In what way, just to recap for those of you who may have missed the story, this was a proposed Islamic center that included a mosque as part of it, but more along the lines really of a YMCA or something like that. And this was a couple of blocks from the site of the World Trade Center, and some portrayed this as a triumphalist move on Islamists' part to celebrate a victory over America somehow.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas I think that the idea behind the project and behind the Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf.
Yes.
Faisal Abdul Rauf, yes. I think the idea behind the project from the very beginning was precisely to model a place like the 92nd Street Y, to have some place where we can see Islam, see American Muslims and the rest of American society come together and create a culture together. And in fact, they did everything as they should have according to plan. They bought the building, they went to the community board and such things. And the project was announced in December of last year to little ado. But then somehow in the early summer, it started to generate a lot of hostility. And by the end of the summer, you saw huge crowds around that site in New York to the point where around the anniversary of September 11th this year, there was a significant demonstration in opposition to it, and I went to see that demonstration, and I'd never really seen anything like that in New York City before. I mean, there were thousands of people on the street just yelling, "No mosque, no mosque, no mosque," and a kind of blatant, in-your-face anti-Muslim sentiment that really left me quite depressed. On the other hand, there was another demonstration just two blocks away that was a pro. You could call it a pro Park 51 demonstration that was very typical of New York City. It was loud, it was rambunctious, it was very diverse, and that one to me seemed much more representative of what New York City was all about. And that one didn't leave me depressed. That one left me quite optimistic.
We have also this year seen more arrests of American Muslims who are alleged to have been involved in plans to target American, you know, army bases, to recruitment centers, subways, Times Square?
Yeah, in fact, I think that's right. And I think that this is a problem, and I think it's a problem that has something to do also with the longevity of these wars. It seems to me that the longer that these wars go on, the more opportunities there's going to be for this kind of retributive, you know, act. And that's why it's more important than ever to find some kind of conclusion to these wars. I think that find a way to get out of Afghanistan. We need to find a way to resolve the situations around the world. You know, we've been in Afghanistan longer than the Soviets were, and it doesn't seem like there's much chance of that conflict declining in the near future. But I think that it's incumbent upon all of us to try to find a way for that conflict to end.
Most Americans, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here, would see those conflicts in terms of the experience of American troops. Do you think most Muslim Americans see it through the experience of the Muslims in those countries?
Yeah, I think that most Muslim Americans see it from multiple perspectives. I think that they see them just like other Americans. Muslim Americans also serve in the armed forces just
like
other
yes.
Americans. And they also, though, I think, particularly if they have family there or if they have family in nearby countries, then they feel the conflict in a more intimate fashion than a lot of other Americans. So I think one of the things that you see is that the Muslim American community is very diverse and it comes from a lot of different places, and that they can bring a lot of different perspectives to the table.
We're talking about the experience of Muslim Americans in 2010 as we draw toward the end of this year. We'd like to hear your story, whether it involves these big issues or your personal story, or as Mustafa Bayoumi suggests, our guest, maybe a little bit of both. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Let's go to Mohammed. Mohammed with us in Portland in Oregon.
Yeah. One of the events recently that happened in Portland, Oregon, kind of changed a lot in terms of the view, you know, of your friends and how, you know, people ask you about what do you see as, you know, as an individual. So one event always kind of traces back to your, you know, living situation, to your work area and all other places. So I didn't expect that, you know, such an evil event to happen in Portland, Oregon. So when I had it, many friends called me, telling me, you know, you heard it, have you heard about it? It's like as if, you know, they always connect you to those events. So that was one of the things that reminds me as a memory.
And so the events that happened completely outside your experience are somehow you're implicated by just by being a Muslim?
Yeah, mainly because, you know, people connect, like if one is like the similar event, like the event that happened in Portland, Oregon, was like, okay, many people do view, because they've been used to neighbors who are like connected together, friends, you know, but that, within that event, it changes the whole thing. People view you as a different person. And again, the guy was, you know, from Somalia, and I'm a Somali born, so that connects, you know, to a bigger issue, and then it creates a lot of implications for you even to connect with your other fellow friends from other religions or other, you know, beliefs. Yeah.
And thank you very much for the call, Mohammed, and we wish you the best of luck in the coming year. And Mustafa Bayoumi, I think he's referring to the alleged Christmas tree plot that was stopped in Portland just a little while ago. And is there an element of collective guilt?
I think quite definitely there is. In fact, what happened afterwards was there was an arson on the mosque in Portland shortly thereafter the announcement of that arrest. And so this is one of the problems, the social problem that I think we have to deal with. It's the idea that that somehow blame can then be just transported across to the whole community. Is a kind of scapegoating, a kind of ethnic or religious scapegoating that unfortunately does have its own precedence in American history. And I think it's something that we should be vigilant in trying to prevent as well.
Here's an email from Chris in Minneapolis. High unemployment equals high anti-Muslim sentiment.
Yeah, I think that that's partly true. I think that there's a way in which when the economy is doing badly, people are looking also again for scapegoats. I also think that it's wrong, it's too narrow to see it as only a Muslim problem right now. I think that you also have a kind of anti-immigrant sentiment that's quite common in the country, perhaps most clearly expressed by the Arizona law, SB 1070.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a kind of anti-Muslim movement going on in the country, you have a kind of anti-immigrant sentiment that's popular as well. And I see that as actually connected also to this idea that at least 20% of the population now believes that the president himself is a secret Muslim, according to some polls. And that, to me, is also it's a kind of way of talking about race that's not talking about race in the traditional American fashion. So to be able to talk about President Obama by saying that he's just, you know, he's not one of us, he's one of them instead. This is a way in which there's a kind of redefinition of what it means to be an American that's actually leaving a lot of people out in the cold right now. And I think that that's what's happened this year to Muslim Americans. They feel more and more like they, as an entire community, have been excluded or are being excluded from the American family.
Our guest is Mustafa Bayoumi, author of How Does It Feel to Be a Problem? He's a professor of English at the City University of New York. He's one of a series of conversations with people of diverse backgrounds on what's changed for them over the past year. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And let's go next to Pakiza in Fremont, California. I hope I didn't mispronounce the name too badly.
No, you pronounced it right. Hello.
Hello.
So I just overheard your interview. I didn't get a chance to hear everything, but the reason why I'm calling is because I've been here since 2001 myself, and I came from Pakistan, but my family is originally from Afghanistan, and I feel like things have changed drastically over the last 9 or 10 years, and still I am an American citizen, but I still come across times when I'm not regarded as a citizen. I do have a accent a little bit, and I work for a company as a sales representative, and just last week I had a customer call back and yell at me because of a delayed package, and she wasn't upset with the company, but she actually called me a foreigner, and she's like, you damn foreigner. And, you know, us being having to go through so much when we left our country and came here, we still haven't found our shelter.
Same
goes for my family back home. You know, I have cousins, I have uncles in Afghanistan, and their situation is no better. I mean, they're in their own country, but they don't feel like they belong there anymore because nothing, I mean, things have changed. There are new buildings, but there's no peace. A lot of corruption, a lot of problems.
I wonder if your experience, do you think it would have been different had your name been Indian or Vietnamese or Mexican?
Oh, no, the lady didn't even know my name. She actually called to ask for a package, and it was delayed, so she said, you damn foreigners. Possibly because the company I work for belongs to Indians, and a lot of people assume that, you know, we're all a family, that I'm their wife or their daughter. So they just, it wasn't specifically because I was Afghan. It was just because I have that accent, which is not so Americanized yet. So we get that. I mean, also I wear a hijab, I wear a scarf, so there are times when I go out, people cut me in the line. I mean, those things really don't bother me, but somewhere I feel like I still haven't made my, you know, I still don't, I mean, I'm trying my best to, you know, settle down here to, you know, be like an average American, but it's still hard. It's hard, and I keep, I just feel like I'm like in the middle person. I don't belong back home because I know I cannot survive there.
Mm-hmm.
But over here, I'm not completely accepted the way I am, and it's not easy. I have called your radio station a couple of times, but I have hung up because I have an accent, and I feel like, or, you know, there are certain times when, you know, certain issues I don't understand because of, I just probably don't have that courage. I don't find myself, okay, I'm an American, I can speak up and stuff, but there are times when I don't feel like that, although I want to.
Your accent is no problem. And
thank you.
And you ask good questions. So please have the courage to stay on the line next time, too, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for the call.
Bye-bye.
Let's see if we go next to this is Brian, and Brian's with us from Idaho Falls.
Hey, hello?
Go ahead, please.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, I work, my name's Brian, obviously. I work at a small television station in Idaho Falls. And, there was a reporter who was Muslim, and I had a Quran, and we got to talking about it, and she told me, you know, start looking through the Quran, and I got really interested in it, and I let her know. I said, you know, what do I have to do to become Muslim, or, you know, start going through the process, because, it's a really intriguing faith. And, you know, growing up as a Christian, it just didn't seem right. But as I went to work, I brought the Quran with me, and I got a lot of flack for it from a lot of people at work, especially from a couple of on-air personalities. And I thought that was just a little bizarre, especially since we're reporting about the site going up next to the World Trade Center. And I was wondering, is that normal for everybody, or is it just...
Well, let's ask, I guess, Mustafa Bayoumi, curiosity about the faith, curiosity about the Quran. Should that be enough to get hostility?
I mean, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it should, but I think, unfortunately, that it does quite often. And I know that even when I'm talking to people who've read my book, it has Arabic on the cover. And people have told me about how they get themselves curious looks or more scrutiny because of the book. Or when people are going through airports, it's quite common to hear stories about extra, a second look being taken at a book because there's Arabic on inside or Arabic on the cover and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, I think this has become a kind of reality, but certainly it shouldn't be the case. And also, if I could just say about the previous caller saying that she feels like she doesn't have a home because she's not quite at home in her place of origin.
And you're going to have to make this very quick, please.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I can't tell you how many times that my friends and I have had that same conversation, particularly over this past year. There's a sense about that we're not exactly sure where we belong anymore.
Mustafa Bayoumi, thank you very much for your time today. He's a professor of English at the City University of New York, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation coming to you from NPR News in Washington.